but maybe we don't have to yet.
We'll take up this time the status conference in the Surface Water Coalition case. Council, would you identify yourselves for the record?
I'm Sarah Klon for the City of Pocatello.
Randy Budge and Candace McHugh for Idaho Groundwater Appropriators.
Candace McHugh with Randy Budge.
Tom Arkush, Your Honor, American Falls Reservoir District Number 2.
Travis Thompson, Surface Water Coalition.
Kathleen Marion Carr with the Department of the Interior representing the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation.
John Simpson, Your Honor, with Twin Falls Riverside Canal Companies.
Mike Kramer for Idaho Durham Association.
Dan Steenson, Blue Lakes. Paul Arrington, Surface Water Coalition.
And who do we have on the telephone?
Ken Fletcher on behalf of Minnetonka Irrigation District.
Ray Young, JRCA, listening on behalf of Rangan.
Ray Young, JR Sinflock Company, listening, thank you.
Michael Gilmore on behalf of the State Agency Groundwater Users.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay, thank you. I'll start with the, I received the letter of Mr. Arrington on the suggested issues. There's the coalition's motion to eliminate or exclude the expert report of John Church. Let's talk about that initially. We talked about it some in the earlier status conference. My inclination is to allow the building a complete record, whether which would require, I think, the cross-examination deposition of Mr. Church, without determining whether the evidence is relevant or not. That's at this time. Anybody want to respond on that?
Your Honor, that makes sense. The only comment I would have is that it sounded like, listening in on the 1:30 conference, that they may or may not have a different view of that, so I'm anticipating there may be more briefing on the issue, understanding that the matter won't be decided regarding relevance until you've actually heard the testimony.
I think we need to extend the discovery schedule as to this witness in view of that. I don't mean to preclude the motion of limine, but I would hate to go through it. A long procedure, grant a motion, and then find out that the evidence should have been in the record, have it come back. Ultimately, I may rule that much of the evidence would either be relevant or irrelevant, but I think it would be best to build the record. Can you agree on a discovery schedule to complete that fits within?
Yes, Your Honor. I think we can discuss that probably without bothering Your Honor about it.
You're talking about as the church meet.
Pocatello had filed a motion for order regarding hearing deficiencies. There have been two responses to that. Bureau of Reclamation had responded that didn't feel it was necessary, and another response to the same effect. Did you wish to comment on anyone wanted to comment on that?
Your Honor, I could comment on the Surface Water Coalition's response, which was filed on Friday. Did you receive that?
Yes.
Okay. They raised three issues, or respond, I guess I should say, to three issues raised in Pocatello's motion. I'd note Your Honor, the first issue relates to our request for clarification on what documents will be considered part of the record. And I don't think we disagree with the Surface Water Coalition's recitation of the rules. Our concern was simply that we know what is in the record. And that goes back to the discussion that was had during the Blue Lakes status conference. And I guess Mr. Rossier maybe could clarify for us whether we are also about to receive an updated CD of documents. We had a CD in the Surface Water Coalition matter, as I recall, that was current through maybe December of 05. And that would be then compiling the remainder of the documents up through today. Is that in the works?
Yes, it is in the works. You know, the focus is on A and B, not A and B, but the spring use of matters,
sure.
Since that's going here first.
Sure. Okay. So that, I don't think there's any dispute on that. There is a new issue raised that wasn't in our motion, but I would comment on it, and that's at the bottom of page 3 of their brief. They raised the issue of burden of proof. And burden of proof is something that we've argued about in this case, and I don't know, maybe they've argued about it in the Blue Lakes call as well. They cite a quotation from AFRD number 2, for the proposition that the Supreme Court has already determined burden of proof issues. I'd suggest that, first of all, that wasn't something that was necessarily briefed at the Supreme Court. It may be dicta. Your Honor may have a better feel for that. In any event, you may want further briefing on that issue of how burden of proof should be apportioned. It's certainly our position that, consistent with the quote here, as well as the discussion in the last status conference, there has been no initial determination of material injury because it was done pursuant to the director's emergency powers. And I realize we may differ with opposing counsel on that point, but we believe that this hearing is the opportunity for there to be established not only what science, as you said, what methods should be used, but then also what injury may accrue once you apply those methods. And it may be worth noting that the Surface Water Coalition and the groundwater users, I think, do agree that the methods used by the director in the Surface Water Coalition order were not proper. So we're on the same page there. Both of us have gone forward in our expert reports to show what injury, if any, we believe to be have occurred. And so this issue of burden of proof may be a little bit of a red herring, but I'd urge you to ask for more briefing if you're not sure, or maybe just reserve the matter for something for you to deal with in the context of your written order. The last point that they raise, which I'll just respond to very briefly, is the issue of the extent to which lawyers will be allowed to cross-examine. You know, we're open to whatever hearing efficiencies that you'd like to impose. It is worth noting there are 12 experts in this case and only 15 days of hearing, and we don't have yet a count of the lay witnesses there to be endorsed. So just struck Pocatello that it might be useful to have that discussion at some point about how this can be conducted in a timely fashion.
Take up the last point first, which is of considerable interest to me, is how many lay witnesses do the parties anticipate actually presenting? Is that going to be a big part of this case, or is it going to depend mostly upon the expert testimony?
May I have
just
a moment, Your Honor?
Sure.
Yes.
From our perspective, we certainly primarily are going to rely on the expert testimony. If we have lay testimony, I would expect 3 or 4 witnesses, and it would be very brief.
We'd anticipate between 5 and 8, Your Honor. A lot of that will be managers of discharge or canal companies.
Pocatello anticipates 2 at the most. And again, brief for us.
What can you fill out a little bit the general nature of the testimony? How much time do you think it would take to put on?
I don't think there'll be long witnesses, Your Honor. They'll describe probably address the issue of material injury and the, to some extent, the operation of the systems and the effects that they've seen, to corroborate as a practical matter what the experts have discussed with you, to line that up so it's clear that this is not a hypothetical case.
So
on that subject, we had some discussion before on whether the parties intended to pre-file their lay testimony. And if they didn't make the filing deadline, then you need to disclose it, obviously. But there was a question on whether or not if the party disclosed the lay witness and then sometime reasonably before the hearing chose to pre-file it, simply a matter of efficiency, if that would be accepted late. I don't know where anybody else comes down on that, but I think for the most part our intention will be to pre-file all of our lay testimony just in a matter of efficiency.
Is the question that if the witness is identified and then it's later pre-filed, is that okay? I mean, the more information one has, the better prior to hearing.
As long as the witness is available for cross-examination.
Yes.
Is that agreeable that there is a notification of a lay witness instead of putting that lay witness on for direct live, that there be no objection to the pre-filed testimony subject to the right to cross-examine?
Yes, sure.
I think so, but I think we ought to have some reasonable cutoff so you don't walk in the morning of the hearing and be handed pre-filed testimony. I didn't intend to utilize that to totally abandon our pre-filed lay testimony deadline, but just to give some parties the option of providing it. I think we would still want to have it some reasonable time in advance of the hearing so you have an opportunity at least to read it. Across.
Maybe that's something we can agree to. Can we negotiate that?
Is this just another pre-file testimony deadline? I'm kind of confused.
I actually think Mr. Budge might be raising it to try and get a read on how much you might be planning to do pre-filed lay testimony, because that would certainly give us a feel for how much time the hearing might take on lay witnesses, but I'm not sure. Right.
Your Honor, if it's agreeable, maybe that by the pre-hearing conference on the 4th, then we could finally know whether it's going to be pre-filed or not. That's 2 weeks, close to 2 weeks ahead of the hearing. Does that resolve that?
Yeah, should you. So you have kind of an optional second date to do that.
And disclose any lay witnesses by what date?
Lay witnesses are disclosed on the
7th. 4th of January.
No. Disclosure of lay witnesses is the 17th.
14th.
Oh, sorry, 14th of November. But then
pre-file. Talking about the pre-hearing conference January 4th.
Would for
Travis,
pre-file.
Is that what you were talking about?
Disclosure.
Fourth.
By
the
disclosure.
But we need a disclosure.
Disclosure in November.
Still
pre-file.
Disclosure.
Disclosure by November 14th and pre-file by January
4th.
4th.
There was an issue raised about limiting the cross-examination of witnesses to only one witness. Have you talked about that? Do we need to talk about it? You object?
We haven't talked about it, Your Honor. Let me finish quickly. I think what you've decided about the motion to limit is prudent. We've, as you know, been to the Supreme Court and we're back here for a record, and I think we need to make a record I have no qualms whatsoever about your capacity to control a hearing if you think somebody wants to delay this thing or take up too much time or waste people's time. One of the problems I see in the premise of the request prior to hearing to designate and limiting who and what are going to do the cross-examination is that these are not monolithic interests, even though they're aligned on two sides of the case. Ms. Klon pointed out, for instance, that in their side of the case, Pocatello is not monolithic with IGWA, so she would expect that there would be separate cross-examinations. I can tell you that, for instance, just for an instance, American Falls Reservoir District Number 2 is in bulk a storage facility. There is now a claim I see in the expert testimony that we take our water from a flood right, not an interconnected right in the aquifer. Those are things that I, as counsel for AFRD number 2, might want to talk about, whereas counsel for Twin Falls Canal Company might not perceive those to be so important. Are we all going to ask the same questions? I don't want to prolong this any longer. Maybe I want to prolong it less than other people want to. So, Your Honor, I really don't think it's a fear, but it's certainly something that can be dealt with it here. That's why I would resist it. I just don't see the interest so monolithic that Twin Falls' counsel are going to want to prepare my case, and I'm not going to want to prepare theirs. And in large part, the differences in the cases are not only the nature of the rights, but the nature of the address that has been made to our rights in the expert testimony we've already received.
Yeah, my point, Your Honor, just if there's an expert report that takes issue with each individual member of the coalition, seven separate irrigation districts and canal companies, being able to focus your questions to your particular client is probably going to be helpful and expedient rather than just put it on one man's shoulders to do everything and address those questions at hearing. I think it'll be more focused.
I think we're in agreement on that. I think each party is represented by separate counsel, certainly should have opportunity to cross-examine, and we can decide among ourselves on opposite side of the aisle who's to take the lead on each witness, and maybe that the city takes lead on one witness and I could go second and vice versa in order to make things efficient. The only area that would be of concern that we would have is you have the Barker Rochel firm that represents a number of parties, whether they intend to have three or four or five members of their firm each take successive shots at cross-examining one of our experts under the idea that since they have multiple members of the Surface Water Coalition, they should have multiple people arguing. And I don't know if they intend to do that, but we did have the Jerome County case where we had arguments where we seemed to have successive arguments from different members of the firm, one after another, and it didn't seem to be very efficient, and I thought that they should, in most instances, for purposes of general cross-examination, designate whether, you know, who's going to be doing the cross-examination for that particular firm. I certainly didn't envision that either myself or Mrs. McHugh or someone else, but not each of us successively on the same witness, even though IGWA has multiple districts as well.
Well, Your Honor, in response to that, I would first note that if we got beyond five, that would pretty much mean we'd have to shut our office down. Maybe that would be better off for everyone. I guess in response to another case, the Jerome County case that was referred to, I mean, obviously there were spring water interests in that case, Thousand Springs Reach users, and there were also interests represented there from above Milner. So in that case, clearly the interests at issue were diverse based upon the clients we do represent. In this matter, again, I mean, we have, when we've taken depositions in discovery of this matter, have attempted, along with other surface water counsel, to not overload the questions, multiple attorneys questioning but instead to try to fashion a reasonable approach to taking those depositions, and we would do that at this hearing. Again, certain counsel have greater expertise within our office representing some of the clients than others do. We do have associations with Mr. Ling, for example, representing Burley Irrigation District and A&B Irrigation District. And on those areas, Mr. Ling, for example, has vast amounts of experience more than someone within our office.
Well, I think we've been parties may cross-examination separate counsel, separate parties. If a firm represents multiple parties, I think that they can have more than one attorney cross-examine, but it should be as to discrete areas, and if it gets beyond its reputation, so simply cut it off. It's a burden of proof issue. Anybody want to comment on that?
I have a short comment, Your Honor. I just want to point out that having heard counsel for Pocatello, this evidently will be an issue. To me, there was a determination of material injury that led us to orders that led us to the Supreme Court, that led us back to here, and the Supreme Court wrote what it wrote regarding the matter. The history of the law is as it is, and as it has been for a long time. I don't think this is a hearing, is a matter that's just a red herring, Your Honor. I think the determination of whether to adhere to the precedent in this state regarding whether a junior carries the burden of proof by clear and convincing evidence is going to be a determination on your part of who bears risk in a drought. It's probably one of the most important questions in this case. We do believe it's been directly determined, directly addressed by the Supreme Court, not in dicta, but in a determination by the court regarding whether these rules are constitutional on their face. And the court was, perforce, had to say that the burden of proof was on the junior in order to find constitutionality. So, one, I think it's a real important issue that I think you're evidently going to hear more of, because evidently it is at issue as a matter of law. And secondly, we disagree as well whether or not it's been determined to date. So that's our position on that question.
When the director asked for submission of materials from the seniors for to support their claim for a delivery call, there was no request from the juniors, no competing request that he considered information from the juniors. I think we're in a situation where there has been no determination of material injury, that it's the same discussion that you just had with the Blue Lakes folks. This is not a trial de novo on the order, it's a trial de novo. This is an opportunity for the Surface Water Coalition to demonstrate that they have been injured, and it's an opportunity for the juniors to contest that. We've never had any opportunity to present evidence before. We've never been asked for information before. The director was acting under his emergency powers. And I disagree with Mr. Arcouche, obviously, about the status of the law. There is the AFRD number two case involved the determination of whether or not the conjunctive management rules were constitutional, and in the context of that, one of the things that was raised was that things like burden of proof are not called out specifically in the rules. And all the court said was that the hearing officer or the judge in charge is authorized, has the discretion to fill in the blanks. So I think that this is something that still is very much on the table. We kind of hoped, Your Honor, that this format with the pre-filed direct testimony would essentially erase some of this dispute. you have in front of you simultaneous direct testimony, which is certainly not the way it would have gone in a traditional hearing, where one side would have had to go first or second. And that's why I suggested initially that this may be something you can deal with in the context of your written order. Your final written order.
Well, it is I think an understanding of what the Supreme Court expects. The threshold showing to be made that there's material injury, and then the response that must be made by juniors, that's standard of law. And they'll be explicit in the order I issue. I'll quote I never carry case names in my head, but I've talked about it some years back. I can rely on that. What else do we talk about?
Your Honor, the other issue raised in the Surface Water Coalition's letter was another, again, it's the same issue that was decided in the Blue Lakes Status Conference, I think, a minute ago, which is how these orders should be dealt with, whether they should be serial or whether we should take them up all at once. And I would hope that the ruling I thought I understood you to make earlier would apply here, that May 2nd order, there's six supplemental orders. They are a package. They ought to be part and parcel of this hearing.
Any comments to that? The May 2nd order, I mean, that is the threshold question. And it affects anything subsequent to that time. So we'll address that and then simply move through to see how a ruling like that impacts subsequent orders. And again, as I stated in the earlier case, that if an objection has been raised to an earlier order and the same thing is repeated in a later order, it's not necessary to designate it as an objection again. In fact, the principle is preserved as an objection.
We had a couple issues related to depositions. Your Honor, I've certainly read the rules, but should we submit subpoenas to you for signature or to the director? Just for clarity here. For subpoena ducis tecum for the depositions.
I'm totally stumped. What's been the process that you followed?
The director has issued.
Okay, so we'll send it to Dave. Okay. Same issue Mr. Budge raised. I've asked the Surface Water Coalition to provide us ahead of time before the depositions underlying electronic spreadsheets and data analyses, which are similar in nature to what we exchanged in 2006. Because otherwise, if we don't get those until the deposition, it'll be a very inefficient deposition. We need to be able to look at those. And I thought I had a commitment, Travis, is that right, to providing that stuff?
Yeah, we should have that this week.
Okay, and you got my email on Friday with the stuff we sent to you, correct?
I think so.
Check and see. If you didn't, let me know. I think.
Yes, I did. I sent that on. I did get that. Okay. From your secretary, right?
Yes. Yes, thank you.
The only other issue keeping with that is disclosing which findings, fact, and conclusions of law parties agree with and disagree with, keeping with what we understood was a directive from the last status conference. In our filing, we identified those specifically. We don't have those from the Surface Water Coalition at this point, which renders it difficult going into the depositions. I suppose we can tell from their testimony what we need to do, but it certainly would be helpful to have some identification of which findings and conclusions they tend to challenge.
Your Honor, itemize that before the deadline.
Our petition challenging the May 2nd order does go through paragraph by paragraph and identify that.
Okay.
Not the
in June.
Not the rest of the implementation order since that time. Right. There's 20 some that
that's right.
We've identified that we haven't done, but that
just
foundational order
just
we have.
Proceed and rely on that. That's fine.
Okay. Anything else? Well, the motion is limited and simply defers and indicated. And when we step outside, I hope it's still raining.
We need snow.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.